I was not recording, but now I'm recording.
Well, good thing we had a live stream going this entire time.
Exactly. And good thing that they got to hear the Fetch Quest podcast opening for Fancy Ramen, a podcast about video games and random entertainment. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
So I've got a question for you, Neil, then.
Yeah.
And since we just heard the Fetch Quest intro, are we going to have, like, the song playing from Doki Doki?
For the actual thing, maybe. I don't know. I just figured that we needed to do something for the live stream.
Right. Piano piece is pretty catchy.
It is.
I guess it's all piano. But you know what I'm talking about.
I like the
main classroom theme.
I like the toy piano best.
Do you guys want to talk about anything before we talk about Doki Doki Literature Club?
Well, how you been, Neil? What have you been up to this week?
I've been playing games.
What? Shit.
Lots of games.
That doesn't sound right. Neil play video games, huh? Doesn't sound right for any of us, actually.
I think my work is actually finally loosening up enough where I don't have to take things home with me mentally, so to speak. So it allows me a lot more freedom to actually focus on things I want to focus on or things I shouldn't be focusing on, probably.
That's good. I worked very hard in the beginning of my professional career to literally like purge my brain of anything work-related. Unless it was absolutely necessary, like once I crossed the threshold of leaving wherever my place of work is.
Cookie's just a straight up baller.
Yeah, I'm pretty good about getting home and saying fuck work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
I thought you were gonna say Cookie can't stop, won't stop. Like
bad boy.
He's got an accounting book right in front of him. He's like, yeah, I can podcast too. It's fine. We'll do it all at once.
Well, so things, stuff. Any other words of wisdom from your normal everyday week?
I'm quickly learning that no one in my back office actually reads anything.
So since you've read the manual, so to speak, you're now the most knowledgeable staff. You are now the senior trader? Senior...
Well, my title is actually senior account manager.
Oh, seriously?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty OP.
Yeah,
that's how he got those gray hairs. It's part of the promotion.
I'm looking for them right now. Are they...
There's one back here-ish. I've got like two gray hairs, but I've always had like two gray hairs.
Might I recommend you use Touch of Gray?
Why would I use Touch of Gray? I want less gray.
Is it Touch of Gray? Wait. Actually, it wouldn't make sense to purposely dye your hair gray, right?
No, that's not true.
Unless you're cosplaying? Is that where this is going?
Maybe? Well, I mean... Everybody has their own opinions and preferences on what makes a good look. So,
how does one find out what their Twitch channel is called?
It's your username on Twitch. So I think it's Cookies Gamilk.
Perfect.
So it's just twitch.tv/cookiesgamiluku.
Cookie spelled with a U, by the way, guys. If you didn't know, C-U-K-I, S-K-M-I-L-K.
I think
M-O-U-S-E, Mickey Mouse.
It would maybe be advantageous of us to talk about Doki Doki Literature Club. It's a game that the three of us all played, at least to some extent. I'm starting to wonder if maybe all three of us actually fulfilled the quote-unquote best ending. But before we go any further, I think it's pertinent to say that this game is free, and there's probably no reason not to go and pick it up unless you don't like anime games.
Yeah, or unless you read the disclaimer and go, oh, not for me.
Yeah, the disclaimer basically says that if you suffer from depression or anxiety, that maybe you shouldn't play this game. And
yes.
I think that is
it's a trigger warning. And it's probably fair that they have it.
Like it triggered some anxiety in me. I'll admit that pretty quickly, I will insert another timestamp or something for when it's safe to jump back into the podcast, but we are going to be talking about Doki Doki Literature Club spoilers because they are very necessary to talk about what this game is and what it does and so forth.
Skip to 48 minutes and 44 seconds to avoid spoilers.
Yep.
I'm ready.
So, I guess to quickly summarize, Doki Doki Literature Club is a visual novel anime-style game that, at first glance... For like the first 2 hours is very traditional dating sim style, even with its own little mechanic of writing poems. And by writing poems, you're just smashing together random words.
Yeah, they're bad poems. I mean, they could be poems. But they would not be anything you'd read at your local coffee shop and get snaps to.
I did my best to make these poems as coherent as possible.
You mean like...
I tried to, but it might be impossible.
Rainbow.
Like, you get to a certain point where it's just grammatically unfeasible.
Rainbow. Yeah. Cute. Inspiring. Hope. Determination. Depression. Sad. Happy. Vacation.
Pretty much.
Really, just to quickly explain.
Infinite sadness.
Yeah.
Sea.
You end up in a club.
Death.
And you're given the assignment to write a poem. And by writing the poem, what you're actually doing is picking out 20 words from like a group of 10. And each of the three main girls that you can actually vie for their attention for, so to speak, respond differently to different words. There seems to be a variance on who you spend more time for, depending on how many like hype words you get for each character. So if you get a bunch of words that are good for Sayori, the childhood friend with short hair, that next day you have the poem. Most of your events are going to go with her.
So does this happen? Slight spoiler, I guess.
This happens before anything happens.
Okay, so after the thing happens, then that mechanic is just thrown out the window, right?
I think it's mostly thrown out the window. Because I tried to force...
I'm trying to say this without sounding very child molesty.
Wow. Okay. I mean, that's just part of like dating sims and visual novels, though. It's like,
is that they're kind of creepy?
It's kind of creepy because we're all in our 20s, and the characters of this game are what, like probably 16 and 17.
Yeah, about sophomore or high school. So I have a question for you then, Neil. Who'd you go for first?
Sayori, because the other two characters are pretty unlikable.
Scott?
So this is what's going to make my description of my game experience quite interesting, is I only watched Sierra play it. She did all the heavy lifting, so she got to make all the decisions, and she decided to go for Yuri, the vice president with the long purple hair.
No. Sayori is actually the vice president, but you might be speaking ahead of yourself.
No, that's not true. I'm pretty...
It is. Oh, it is totally true.
Yeah, your childhood friend's the first vice president.
Okay.
Well, I won't elaborate too much on that then, but against all of my protestations, Sierra picked Yuri, and I was like, I don't like this idea, but I'll be able to give you that perspective nonetheless, because she did not listen to me.
Yeah, and
okay,
like...
Okay, good, because I went for Yuri as well.
I'm assuming that the thing happens no matter who you pick, correct? Did someone decide that things were a little too rough at maybe someone's suggestions? I mean, this is a spoiler cast.
I was about to say, you're being too vague now.
Now I can't answer your questions, because I don't know.
Correct me, or tell me if something different happens, but regardless of what goes on for the 3 days that you actually have control over who you hang out with, you end up having preparations for your school festival and end up helping either Natsuki or Yuri preparing whatever the hell they're doing, if it's cupcakes or flyers. And then you, the next day, after a heartfelt conversation with Sayori, you end up going to Sayori's house to check up on her, and you find that she has hung herself.
Correct.
Did that happen with you, Scott?
Yep. And I had done some reading on the game after Sierra completed it, and I couldn't find any like completely reputable source that says you can definitely save Sayori. I think it's pretty much a guaranteed outcome, unless you do some messing around with the client files.
We'll definitely talk about that soon, but
it's not relevant right now.
Yeah. Right. When you end up, this is where like really the twist in two different ways comes up. When you end up finding her body hung from a noose, it starts to glitch out in a way that, like, if anyone's familiar with Danganronpa, it kind of has that sort of graphical shtick where it completely gets rid of like the visual novel sort of picture and dialogue box and goes for more like of a somewhat not animated, but more of like a flashy cinematic, which uses like visual effects. Mm-hmm. Part of the visual effects, though, play out like as a glitch, and you even see an error message pop up. Or not an error message. I think it's even like a directory in like text font on the screen by your body.
Oh, yeah. You get to see a, it's like a PIP, picture in picture, of a command line screen. That's what you're talking about, right?
Exactly. And yeah, it seems to imply that it's referencing a file within the game directory. And I don't know if you guys, Cookie, I talked to you just a bit before, but it doesn't sound like you actually accessed that file.
Correct. I did not.
So,
You can.
Yeah, you can. And, but before, granted, that happens, you basically end up getting a monologue from the main character saying that, like, it's all his fault. And the game eventually ends. And it's like bad. I don't remember if it says bad end, but it says end or the end.
Then you go through the credits, I believe, and or maybe you don't go through the credits at that point, but you certainly get rerouted back to the start of the game, in which even the little opening flashes of the logo for the game developer, which is Team Salvato, is all glitched out as well. Like those graphical artifacts of things glitching out continues into your next playthrough of the game.
Right.
And really by next, we should also note that you're not done with the game after you get the first ending. It's one of the, it's a trope that's coming out more and more. Like the end is actually just the beginning of some of these pieces of media. And that's especially true for Doki Doki Literature Club.
It's pertinent to say that, like, the game takes quite a while to get to that twist, but I almost feel like it has to, because then at that point in time, you hopefully have an attachment for the characters.
Yeah.
You're a little more invested. Did you guys read all the poems?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good, because I did not read through. So after day two, when the poems started getting longer, I was like, okay, I read one. I read Yuri's, because that's who I was actually after. Mm-hmm. And then everyone else is, I kind of just skimmed.
So who was your favorite poem writer, though, Neil? And I guess Cookie, I don't know. Since you didn't really read anybody else's poems particularly.
I actually really like Natsuki's poems best.
Yes, like they're so good. I agree. I thought her poems were hilarious. And I kept trying to get Sierra to change her choice of Yuri to Natsuki. So I'm like, her poems are just objectively more fun.
But they are both like... Okay, first off, I'm going to say that, like, while I probably play the most visual novels out of all of us,
This is the one that I've played, so
I don't play dating sims that much, and I'm also like not really into harem animes either. So when you start playing this game and you get into the first couple normal days, it's painfully obvious that what we have at our hands here is like the anime harem trope. Protagonist where the girls fight over him, and as soon as those two girls, Yuri and Natsuki, start fighting over the main character, I'm just immediately like, nope, undateable. Get out of here.
And like, getting to watch a girl play the game with Sierra doing all the controls on my end, I got to hear her gripe the whole time, like, who is this dude? I'm a schmuck. My dude sucks. Like, why do they want to be with him so bad?
Yeah, exactly.
She's just shit-talking her character. I'm like, yeah, well, he does seem particularly bland at the very best. So
he's just the most funny. Prototypical nerd character that doesn't necessarily look like a nerd, and that makes him desirable in anime.
Yeah.
You have brown hair and are of average height. Oh my gosh, can you have my children?
And completely nondescript in any other features.
I think the best anime that describes the nondescript male protagonist character was Lizzie knows the name of this anime. It's about a high school girl who wants to have 100 sexual partners, but she's never dated anybody.
Oh, I read that manga.
What's it called?
I've read
called?
Some of it, I should say. I did not complete that.
Whatever it's called, like when in the anime, when she like first meets the dude, they actually draw in like a super generic blank face. So it's like full body, like everything's nice and detailed, and then his face is just like crown animations.
Yeah, the joke of that, the ongoing gag for at least like the first part of that series is her talking about how fucking bland and plain he is. So why should she care about him?
Which makes him her best chance at a first sexual exploit. That was one of Lizzie's favorite animes.
But she never has like any, at least I'm assuming that's the gag, right? I mean, okay.
Either way, off topic.
So when you start the game anew, you basically go through the motions, but this time Sayori has been deleted. And you might question, like, wait, what? What's going on there? Which, if you look into the directory at the file, that pops up during her death scene, her body discovery, I guess. It looks a lot like a legitimate error log, you know, like her crash log. You access it, you start reading through it, and then you see some dialogue in it where this person's like, okay, I don't know what happened here, but I'm just going to delete her character since she was a pain in the butt anyways. And all right, let's see if this works now. And
oh, so it was Monica.
Yeah. You start playing and she's just gone now. You have a glitch initially where a character pops up, but is just made out of a bunch of different like image pieces. And then the game crashes back again to the title. You start new. And oh, I should note too, by the way, when you hit the load button, because I'm assuming like, oh shit, the way I was playing through the game, she kills herself after confessing your love to her, or at least our protagonist.
And the protagonist, so you thought if you changed your action, you may have saved that outcome?
Yeah, and so when I hit the load button, it says everything. That the save is corrupt.
Yeah. I got hit with that one.
And then, yeah, then it says, all right, we're just going to force you to start a new game. And then she's just basically gone.
I didn't know that it did that. We just, like, forged ahead. We're like, ah, shit, well, she's dead. Who's next?
So you just hit new game afterward?
Yeah.
but why would
you didn't try to load up? I was like, oh, God, she's dead. Oh, no. Okay, I can fix this. We can load, and it's going to be fine.
I mean, I would have tried to save the character as well, but, you know, I was not the commander of that ship. So Sierra was just like, well, it's not Yuri, so we're going to keep going. Like, one less girl to get in the way.
The interesting thing is that when you're playing this time through, at certain points, you get to unlock special poems, which are completely, like, they don't seem related to the protagonist. It just gives you a prompt that says, you've unlocked a poem. Would you like to read it? And then there's a yes and no. And the main character doesn't mention anything.
They're all pretty disturbing, aren't they?
They're extremely disturbing. I'm not sure what you guys got because you guys were going for Yuri, but because I was going for Sayori, who is now dead at this point, or non-existent, I got what I'm assuming is Natsuki's first poem, which seems to imply that her father is...
Nope, I got that poem too.
Okay, where like someone's father is physically and maybe sexually abusive to the writer.
Mm-hmm.
It's...
Oh shit, I don't think I got that one.
How'd you not get that one?
I don't know, maybe I did and I just didn't see it. I was...
Maybe Sierra's like, oh, Yuri didn't write it. Who cares? Click. This desperate plea for help, doesn't matter.
Jeez.
But yeah, so it's like, so no, I got that same exact thing as well. And I was like, oh, Cleesa didn't say anything outright. Which is kind of, that's also why I think there might not have been multiple endings, but you're saying, yes, there are multiple.
I think there's only one successful route to take, because I think the ultimate ending that you can opt to take at any point in time is to stop playing and uninstall
or to get into the program files and
right, but that's only possible
to the final ending.
That's only possible once you get to that fail state, right?
I believe after Sayori dies you can start messing with files.
So that's the thing. You can actually start messing with files immediately, but it seems like there are a lot of preventative states in place where if you delete critical character files that are in the character folder, because it's so, you know, like, because this is how programmers program, you can ultimately cause the game to glitch and kill itself in a different way.
Yeah, and I think it acknowledges that too. Read correctly, like if you delete, say, everybody but Monica, it acknowledges that, and she has a conversation with you before the game is over.
Like, oh, see, I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, and of course, you know, that is, if we want to talk about the like true final ending of this game, and true is with quotes as well, right? The I would say, final ending in which the person or entity that's been kind of rigging the game against you the whole time you've been playing it finally confronts you and, you know, eliminates everybody else out of the way. You can just rush to that state by eliminating the roadblocks in your way, altering the program files, instead of going through all of that text and dialogue. Because there's, I guess you could approach it as either you can do the work yourself through actually messing with the game's files, or you can do it by interacting with the game until it takes the actions to adjust the files in game and not, you know, through like your desktop's folders with, you know, deleting.
Well, how did you get to that point then? But before we jump to the Monica cutscene,
I haven't. So I've only read about this on some like gaming news websites.
Well,
so
what did Sierra do though? Done
it. Sierra and I did it the whole way through. We did the invest in a character over and over and over again until they're no longer an option to invest in.
So you invested in Yuri, and again, like,
yeah,
we don't need to spare any words. Did you get the stabbing scene?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we did.
Okay.
So with the Yuri stabbing scene, I was actually trying to force, once again, while trying not to sound like a pedophile.
Natsuki?
Yeah, I was trying to force a Natsuki ending. Because I was like, oh, because since I took Yuri to, since Yuri decorated in my room, I was like, oh, Yuri cuts herself. Okay, I get this now. Because when you like go to get tea and
yeah,
you walk
and
back
she,
in,
she has
rolls
the
down her,
and so forth.
She
yeah.
rolls down her sleeves really quickly. You're like, oh, okay, she cuts herself. That's her bag. What's her name's got super depression. What's going on with Natsuki? Now, for the second playthrough, I want to see why Natsuki does not want to spend any time at home. But I never get to find out besides the poem that says, maybe her dad's touching her.
Maybe also beating her. Maybe both.
Possibly. Yeah. So now I'm just like, okay. So I guess maybe I do have to uninstall the game and reinstall it and play to find out what her bag is.
Yeah, I don't know, because we stuck it out with Yuri the whole time. Like, after doing the scene where she and you work on the festival project, and you, like, cut yourself with the knife, there's a pretty disturbing moment that happens. I'm like, I'm out. We're done with Yuri. We need to back out of this.
Wait, like, are you talking about the scene where she sticks your finger into her mouth?
Yeah. She puts your blood in her mouth, and I'm like, I'm done. We're good. It's been a pleasure knowing you. I'll see you next week.
I hope that next week you end up stabbing yourself to death or something.
Yeah.
Did that go through your mind?
So I wanted to back out at that point, but Sierra kept chugging along. And it just gets like creepier and creepier and like more stressful interactions with her. So I was wondering if Natsuki was a better option or not. Like, she was less disturbing.
Did you bake cupcakes with Natsuki then?
No, I never
had an opportunity to interact with Natsuki at all.
I went with Yuri as well, because I mean,
we should have planned this better.
Regardless of the disclaimer that all of these characters are under the age of consent, you just feel kind of bad going for the washboard. the underclassman washboard.
Yeah, Sierra doesn't get tsundere either. Like, she doesn't understand it. So when she's like, I mean, sure, they're delicious, but I don't care what your opinion is, and then blushes, she's like, wow, what a bitch. So she just ignores her. Like, it doesn't register that what she's saying is not genuine. And so Sierra just thought, she's like, she's so mean, we're not giving her any time.
Damn.
I don't care what happens to her.
Did you sit Sierra down and say, hey, this is a character trope and archetype?
I tried to explain it, and she's like, well, that doesn't stop her from being mean.
It's like, okay.
So, yeah, we were doomed to not follow that storyline. I wonder if, I'm really curious if you can actually pursue Monica at all in this game.
So,
and also, another question is that when it gets to the point where you're almost like forced to pursue Monica...
When she's deleted everyone, and
do you have it where the cursor is like magnetically attracted to Monica's name out of like, who do you want to help? Natsuki, Yuri, Monica. And Sierra fought against it until she could click Yuri. It took her like 5 minutes to get the timing just right to like pull it up and, oh, then she click gets on the, Yuri she gets as the blue it eyes. Shots back to the Monica.
So she got the blue and, eyes then?
Yeah. So what happened yeah. for when she picked Yuri at that point? Because I picked Monica when things were fine, quote unquote. And it was very
yelled at.
No, it was talked around, I guess you could say. The other two characters are like, wait, what? Like, you already have Sayori helping you, and you have the easiest job. He should be helping one of us. And Monica protests a lot, but then is ultimately like, okay, I guess you guys are right. Fine. You should probably pick between these two.
I did that as
well. Okay. No, I didn't know that. What happens if you pick Yuri at that, because it's a much later moment in the game.
It's the second time you're about to help somebody out.
Monica has, like, a window pops up, like, oh, no, that's not right.
Okay.
And so, yeah, she, like, comments in the, pop-up on the screen.
The notification as opposed to the text to the main character.
Yeah, like, you should have picked Monica, but I think you still end up getting Yuri out of that. And you just have...
Yuri just pulls you aside.
Yeah.
Right before you're about to leave. And then goes on a stabbing fest. So...
That's right.
When you said, hey, you can't pursue Monica, actually, on the second time playing through, when you're doing some of the poems, specifically, I saw this on the poem where it kept just doing, adding ones to count up to 20.
Oh, yeah. 1, 1, 1. 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1.
I picked the word... I think it was like cheerful or something. And then Monica Sprite
to pop up from the bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
I had the same thing happen. Yeah. Monica's little chibi character model pops up from the bottom of the screen sometimes when you pick words that are relevant to her.
So I was trying to figure out what's going to be the most relevant words to her. Because I was actually kind of pissed that I couldn't go after Monica the first playthrough.
Yeah, she truly was the best waifu in this game.
Only waifu.
Willing to break the fourth wall just to be with you.
Have you followed her on Twitter?
No.
She has a Twitter, guys. You didn't know that?
What?
Okay, I'm going to find her Twitter
right now.
Is it
Little Monix? Little Monix 3.
Yeah, Little Monix 3.
Is this?
Yeah, no, it's a legit Twitter, by the way.
Like the game developer's Twitter they have for it, or?
This is Monica's Twitter for Monica, the character in Doki Doki Literature Club.
Was this ever brought up in like the game, actually?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. It might be during her cosmic space, I destroyed the universe of gaming scene. Hi, I'm Monica, high school devil and president of the literature club. Poetry is life. And she has tweets all the way back to February on Valentine's Day.
Today is my favorite day. Also finally got on Twitter. Now to find some real people to follow. Hee hee.
What does it mean for someone to be in beta? I keep hearing that, and that was back in July. And then, September, when the game releases, I'm pretty sure, it says, the club is open!
Let's keep on pressing forward through, the game's...
weirdness?
Proper ending, I guess. And then we can talk about some of the weird things we may have seen along the way. Ultimately, there is a Natsuki path, by the way, where I think... I don't know, you don't necessarily get confronted with knife stabbing moments, but instead you get confronted more with like game breaking moment stuff, like missing eyes, missing face, bleeding.
Then she does eyes, the graphical does shit. The neck break thing run towards you.
Ooh.
Oh, what? So you know about that?
Yeah, no, that happened in my playthrough as well. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. There aren't multiple things. Like it kind of forces you around. Yeah. And I'm wondering if you bake cupcakes with Natsuki instead of doing the thing with what's her face? Stabby McGee.
Yuri and her like banner or pamphlet stuff, whatever.
Her watercolor banner. Yeah.
Her watercolor banner. I wonder if the second time you go through the game at that point, it's Natsuki's issues get like super pushed on you.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't remember that happening when we went for Yuri. Like, we just got deeper and deeper Yuri stuff going on.
I had a little Natsuki bit of Natsuki
just
stuff.
Kept getting put to the wayside.
And I guess I got more things with Natsuki because I was trying to force a Natsuki ending on the second playthrough. So that way, like, I found out that she, like, passes out, kind of falls asleep next to me when I'm reading manga, sitting on the floor with
her. And her eyes get all fucked up. I did see that scene.
And then, what's her name, like, throws her a snack And she's like, don't worry, that happens sometimes.
Yeah, Monica gives her a snack. She eats it. Now she's not glitching out when she talks and stuff. It was, man, I don't know why. That type of stuff disturbs the fuck out of me. So regardless, at the end, everyone's gone except you and Monica. And Monica breaks the wall multiple times here.
And finally wants to talk to the real you. And I'm like, God damn it, why did I name myself Cookie? Because things got real after that. No, I don't want to talk to this digital Cookie. I want to talk to the real you, Cookie. Like, God damn it.
Well, yeah, she used, like, I'm trying to think of where the game got my name from.
Wait, oh, so it's she probably used from your name?
Steam profile. Or maybe the username on your computer.
Maybe that's it, because it was like, it was not an appropriate iteration of my full name, but it was my full name without spaces.
Wait, and I'm just like, confused as to what you have set up for your like user profile that is.
Yeah, maybe it's my Windows user profile or something.
So now it comes down to, did she use your name, Scott?
She used Sierra's name. Sierra's character was named Fran, and then she used Sierra's name later. And I was like, holy shit. It blew my mind for a second, because the same question went through my head. It's like, where did the game access this information? And it's pretty clever that wherever they pull it from, they can have a success like that. Like, that's the developer thinking very critically, like, where would someone most likely use their real name for an identifying string and then pull that string and insert it into the game? And so that's why I think it's probably a user profile. Like, you have your admin account, and then you have user profile for Scott, user profile for Sierra, stuff like that.
That was a good moment.
Yeah, yeah.
It was.
But then you eventually enter what seems like a loop, because it's just you and her. And if you shut down the game and turn it back on, you and her, and she talks about how, like, oh, I don't know what happened, but, like, it felt terrible. Like, it was all darkness, or it was hell. And there's multiple iterations of it.
I'm surprised you went back to her. Once we got stuck at that point, we were like, oh, Monica's got to go. She's crazy. So we deleted her out.
It's just that, like, when you're stuck with that, with Yuri's dead corpse after the stabbing, I'm assuming you could have gone in and deleted Yuri's name or Yuri's character file, but instead, if you just let it skip for a long time.
3 days.
Yeah,
3 days. It's the weekend.
Eventually, Natsuki comes in.
And says, oh, Natsuki comes in, barfs all over the place, runs out, then Monica comes in and is like...
The barfing graphic. I was cracking up at that, because I was just like, oh, that's actually the thing that caught me most off guard out of all of the graphics in it.
Is
her coming in being like, what's that? And then, blah!
Yeah, so I kind of assumed that that maybe I didn't need to start altering things until I knew, like, all of my options were out. So I ended up restarting the game enough times where it started to repeat. And so at that point, that's when I went in and deleted Monica's character file.
Yeah, and you can play through the whole thing without ever restarting. Like, we never reloaded anything when we played. We just kept moving forward. Like, Sierra would save, but we never went back and actually accessed a save file.
Oh, so
and
you did?
We
did
were
you guys
able to get to
to
the same ending as you guys.
Did you guys get to see the fact that they deleted all your save files?
Multiple
times?
Multiple times.
Oh,
great.
No.
Yes.
In fact, if you try and save when you're with Monica, she says something like, oh, don't worry. You don't need to use that
You don't need
anymore.
To do that anymore. Yes. After you finally delete Monica and you have to go back through the game again, I told Neil I did something, and Neil was like, huh. So I actually took Monica out of my recycle bin and put her back in the game.
Ooh. Because at that point, she, like, if you had not done that, what ultimately would have happened was you would have had the normal ending, right?
Yep. And so what happens is, after I put her in the game, I go through like one thing of text, and then Monica's box pops up and she says, why do you torture me like this?
Oh.
No, I'm leaving. Goodbye. And then she was just gone. So not in my delete files or anything. Just
it deleted itself.
That file was completely gone. And by this point, I actually had the files on my second monitor. So I could actually watch them, like, they were deleting and being put back on in real time. With the game.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, okay. This is
that
nice.
Would be unsettling.
I bet. Okay, yeah. So and at that point, once you played through without her file, it's very hunky-dory. It's some heartfelt moments.
And then it becomes not hunky-dory.
Wait, what are you talking about?
At the third playthrough?
I don't think I got this. What happens during the third playthrough?
What's her name? Sayori. That's your best friend, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like, the new president. Thank
you. She's like, she's the new president. Everything's good. And then by the end of the first day, she's like, by the way, I knew you were joining the club. Thank you for getting rid of Monica. And you're like,
yeah, she's like sentient. Right, right.
This is all still okay. But okay. What happens after that?
Oh, then things start to slowly flash into the Monica crazy layer, but with Sayori. And then Sayori starts to glitch out because Monica comes back. Her file doesn't come back, but Monica like comes back and starts fighting Sayori with deleting shit.
So there is.
So did you get a different ending?
So you didn't get the speech from Sayori saying stuff like, you know, I'm so glad that you befriended everyone in the club, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. No, we got that.
Yeah. And then eventually it started like slowly fading into the like sinister club room that you got when you were stuck with Monica for a little bit.
Do you get the song at the end?
Mm-hmm.
This portion that I played while I was half asleep, I'm wondering if I just started skipping through text once I realized this was the quote unquote good ending. I mean, I kind of skipped through a shit ton of text on the second playthrough when I realized that the skip button, when I say skip, I was like hammering through a lot of the text in the second playthrough when I realized that the skip button didn't really skip text you had already read, just cutscenes. So if Sayori like had one line of text in a cutscene or in a scene, but she's not there anymore, it's no longer skippable. So I just felt the need to like start hammering away at that space bar and occasionally seeing black text that would pop up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you lower your text speed so you could read it?
Shit, that's what I should have did.
You lower your text speed all the way down and then you can read it at like a reasonable pace.
But that just seems like it takes so fucking long to get
through. No, because that stuff, I mean, it comes out relatively quick otherwise. And
the black text,
it's just a flash sometimes. Yeah. Like you click it and as soon as the sentence is done, it moves on to the next one. So the only way to appreciate it is the slower text speed. And then like many games, if you hit the next button before a sentence is done, it will autocomplete. And so you're just double tapping on other sentences that you know.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So basically throughout this talk, guys, I'm going to have to re-download this. I'm going to have to uninstall this game and replay through it one more time.
I don't think I can. My heart's kind of a little weakened already. Before you do that, you should go check out the directory. You'll see like an image and you'll also see like a nice little poem that... It's kind of alarming, too.
Sweet. So, Scott, before we actually got onto the podcast, I brought up to Neil, like, you know how, remember how Neil was making us play localhost?
Yeah, I do. I prefer this option over localhost.
I could see that. And he got, like, real emotional and attached with localhost. And I was like, so how'd this make you feel?
I don't think I got that emotionally attached to it. I thought it was a super interesting little.
You were at
like,
least more
gimmick.
Interested. Then Cookie was determined to do his job right.
Yeah. I mean, I played it enough times to get the ending that involved you not getting fired or quitting.
Wait, so you finally got one?
Yeah, if you just fucking delete the drives without listening to bullshit, you get to keep your job.
And you don't quit? Sweet.
Yep.
That's good. Now I'll have to never play that game.
That game's like not good in a lot of ways. I just appreciate how they play with you a bit on your perception of game mechanic versus like is the game lying to me sort of thing. Whereas
yeah,
I think
the game is good because of that. Like the impact of the game is a lot more than what the actual like experiences with the game.
Wait, are we talking about
local host?
Okay,
very
yeah.
quickly. Local host has a really grand idea that it puts into your head, and it's pretty accessible. Like the doubting your task, and then doubting how honest the game is with you through either the initial premise of just having to delete these drives. or the dialogue that the drives give you. The atmosphere that it's creates is really good. The execution is not particularly good. Like,
yeah,
the dialogue isn't tied together particularly well, and you can get some weird things out of order. But the idea is there.
It's almost as if they had given this idea to maybe like a more competent writing staff and team.
Or
it
just
could
a
have
larger
been something way more
team.
Special.
No, yeah.
In contrast, like Doki Doki Literature Club, I think, does this excellent job. And to answer your question, like excellent job of getting you like attached to the characters to at least some extent, and then having it kind of turn on its head entirely to become something not about the characters and not about your protagonist, who was obviously like extremely unlikable. Because as I was playing it, my perception of this was like, okay. I mean, and maybe this is different for other people, but when I'm playing a game, I try and like visualize what my protagonist wants and like try to put in some of my own will into the situation. But like, despite trying to vie for only one character's affection as much as possible, he constantly scumbags it up, talking about like, I get to spend all this time with these cute girls. But like, that's obviously not a problem, because the game itself is kind of like a, not a parody, but kind of a stab at dating sims in general, I guess. Kind of like Hot of a Boyfriend is, but like in a more aggressive fashion.
No, I could see that. Still have to play that game, maybe. Eh, maybe not.
I mean, it's a dating sim, but there are birds. You know, because the bird is the word.
I mean, dating birds is at least a little more novel than dating young high school girls in a game. And it's probably a little less like problematic.
Yeah.
No one probably honestly has any emotional feelings towards birds.
Like, it was super shitty when you had the choice with Sayori to either be like, let's be best friends,
or I love you.
It's like, these are exactly the things that someone who is like suffering from major depression needs. Where's the third option of how about we go to this clinic?
Hey, oh yeah.
Where are your parents? Like, there's so many other options. That was maybe like the one thing that kind of bugged me, aside from like the protagonist being like an idiot, but that I guess goes along with it. I don't think the game was necessarily trying to take light of depression or of anxiety, not anxiety, but like of the states that each of these characters are in. But at the same time, I kind of felt that like this also does not promote a healthy response to that condition.
Nope. It made me genuinely sad.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, I don't know what to say / do for Sayori. Fuck me.
And you have two horrible options to pick from.
Yep. And I chose what I thought would be the least horrible and ended up getting with a hung girl and tried to load up and no.
Denied.
So I was like, okay, now I am sad. And now this character is no longer in this fantasy world. Fuck me. And then it's like, okay, I guess I might as well push on. And next thing you know, Stabby McStabberton is going slightly crazy. And we're like, oh God, she's taking a very long time with this water kettle. Lizzie was like, I wonder if she's in the bathroom, like touching herself. I'm like, she's probably touching herself with something. And then you walk around the corner to see bloody arm Yuri. And you're like, okay. Yep. And then things back up and she's like, I'm back. I'm like, yay. I don't know what to do anymore.
Everything's okay. The game's particularly like cognizant of the whole dating sim trope too, though. And Monica's talking about how like how she was frustrated that these three other characters just seem to like, no matter what, fall in love with you or the protagonist. So like, I don't want to just completely bash its, I don't want to give off like that much of a negative impression. Like, I was happy that the game acknowledges that fault or flaw within the genre. So I heard that apparently if you stream this game, and I don't know if this is true, it's just like third hand knowledge, that if you stream this game, during the ending sequence with Monica, Monica will create or basically have jump scares.
Huh.
So it like plays out slightly different, not in the context of the story, but basically I think the idea is that just I don't know what the intention behind that is, but I guess just to make it have more shock factor if you're streaming the game, that sort of thing. Excuse me. But yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. And I also felt deeply disturbed playing it.
So are you glad I just randomly mentioned it in our chat like 3 days ago?
Yeah. I actually started playing this like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and I was 30 minutes in and I completely forgot about it because nothing was happening. And coincidentally, when you brought this up in chat, my brother had just messaged me saying, I just got to the first twist in Doki Doki, not sure if I'll continue. And I'm just like,
oh, what?
What is this twist?
Well, yeah, what could stop you from playing a game? Oh.
Especially if it's a twist. Those are usually good things about games. Nope.
There is a twist in the knot.
It's dark.
This isn't the first game that has you altering game files to progress. There's one game in particular that the name's escaping me, but it's kind of like a horror game, except everything's pixel art that looks like a level lower than Doom, original Doom. Not saying that Marathon. 2016 Doom is bad.
Marathon?
Is that the game's name?
Marathon? No, Doom. Marathon.
Wait, that's the original Doom's name?
I think so. No. Something like that.
No, Marathon was the original Halo.
Oh, it was one of the two.
I mean, yeah. That also doesn't look great by today's standards, but...
What, Marathon or Halo?
Halo. Like, not looking at the... I'm not comparing it to Doom, but if you've ever played the Master Chief Collection and you switch between the remastered Halo 1 and the original Halo...
Oh, yeah.
It's jarring. Yeah, I don't recall what it is, but I thought that was a very interesting mechanic to have. I would be curious to see what you could do to the game, because I'm wondering if there are any Easter eggs that are not as obvious as going in and deleting Monica's character name. But really, all I know about is if you delete Monica on a fresh install, you end up causing quote-unquote glitches, not actual glitches, but like glitches within the fiction, and you get the end title screen or the end title block, whatever you want to call it, is another shot of Sayori hanging herself. So that kind of, it seems like it's trying to teach you that you can't just willy-nilly edit files, but I'm not really sure.
Nice. All in all, I'd say that was a good 4 hours of my life right there.
Yeah, I was
it took me a little long to get to the first.
Until we got to the twist, and then
I was like, okay,
certainly drew me in. I'm like, holy shit, okay, time to pay
attention.
What's
going on? Yeah.
Probably cut a couple years off of my life.
Lizzie was unenthused for the first 15 minutes that she actually watched, which was me going through most of the first playthrough until we saw the dead body. And we're like, oh, okay. Then she was like, okay, what the fuck is going on? And then she was like, then she was invested in like, oh, try this. I'm like, okay, cool, we'll do this. Then she walked away for a little bit, and I was just like, oh my God, what is going on? And she came back, and she's like, okay, you can't play any more of this without me right here. It's like, sweet. Well, buckle up, buckaroo. We're finishing this.
Are we ready for a segue?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So maybe if she likes dead bodies, maybe she'd enjoy Danganronpa 1 and 2 that you just picked up recently.
Oh yeah, I forgot about those.
There are dead bodies in that game. I bring that up because I really quickly wanted to clarify. I just finished V3, and I don't think that game is nearly as good unless you have played the first two games.
So I made a good choice in buying 1 and 2.
You made an absolute good choice. I think the first twist in the first chapter and the twist in the last chapter are amplified to a degree with knowledge of the first two games. And if you don't have that knowledge, not only are the twists like less meaningful, but the last chapter is actually harder because of it too. Harder from like a standpoint of like the game is expecting me to answer questions that I should know, or with answers I should know, but I don't know because I hadn't played the first two games.
So would I also need to watch the anime?
No. I would say that I don't think there's any connecting information from the anime to... and that's the Danganronpa 3 anime, which is actually a sequel to 2. And then they made V3, I think, just to imply that it's the third game as opposed to the anime, so to speak. But no, you don't need to watch the anime.
And by the anime, I'm talking about all the anime.
So there are three series, and I guess just because of the questions here, I'll quickly explain. Danganronpa 1, the game, and then Danganronpa 1, the anime, are, I think, synonymous with each other. It's the same storyline.
Ooh, so you mean I can just watch the anime and not have to play the game? Sweet!
You could.
That's how I got through Persona 4.
Danganronpa 2 does not have an anime made off of it. When they got approved to make an anime for Danganronpa 2, they decided instead to make a sequel/prequel. So there are two parts to the third anime. One is the future arc, which you watch first, but back to back. And then you have the despair arc. So you watch future episode 1, despair episode 1. Even though despair takes place before number 2 and after 1, that's how they aired it. They broadcast it episode after an episode, or one after the other. I would say you only need to watch those, since that's the only other effectively different anime, if you really enjoyed the second game. Like, so if you really like the cast from 2, then the anime is totally worth watching. But if not, it's not extremely necessary.
So what you're saying is Danganronpa the animation, Danganronpa 2, Danganronpa 2 despair/future arc, the animation, V3.
Yeah. Or future despair, I guess. Future, oh, future first despair. Then despair. Then yeah. But that's if you guys want to see more dead bodies.
You know.
It's super good though. I finished it and I spent way too much time like staying up this week accomplishing that. But I think like it could be because I played the second game this year too, but I think this game may have shooed in itself at number one for me so far this year.
Nice. Oh, question. Was it a physical copy?
For
V3?
No, I actually got it on Steam. Okay. So
we'll just have to find a copy of that eventually when I get through.
Yeah, and again,
Kingdom Hearts 3.
You might be counting yourself, or you might be approaching this too hastily, because if you get through the first two games and you're like, then I mean,
no, I would have to get through the first two games first. I've made my bed with Kingdom Hearts,
right?
So there's only so much.
I'm just saying that like it may not be your cup of tea, but
yeah, we'll find out.
It's pretty spectacular. I need to give some distance between like the ending and play some other games so I can get a perspective of like exactly how good it is in this particular year's releases of games. But I did pick up a game that I think it's been out for a while, but it's called Xenonauts. It's a original XCOM or UFO defense inspired game. And I make that distinction because it does not play all that much like the reboot of XCOM that we've seen in recent years. 2015, I think. And then XCOM 2 came out, I think, last year. Those games have really downplayed a lot of the base management and resource management side of things. Xenonauts embraces it and gives you like a much truer experience to what the original XCOM released in like 1990, whatever. It's a fairly faithful replication of what XCOM was. So if you kind of feel like torturing yourself and getting half of your team killed off of one alien, and then, you know, researching alien corpses and shit, more corpses for you. I definitely recommend picking it up. Basically, if you liked original XCOM, you'll like this game. The artwork kind of sucks, which is kind of a bummer, but I mean, that's to be expected for a smaller development team. What have you guys been playing?
I have still been stuck in World War II, also in the distant future past as Aioli in Horizon Zero Dawn. Forgot the name of the title of the game. So not much new there, actually. Kind of, you know, just trying to slog through games, play a little bit at a time. They finally fixed Call of Duty for all intents and purposes right now. EA is now the worst company known to God, turns out. if you haven't heard, their UFC 3 microtransaction debacle now.
No,
I have not. Do you fill us in?
Yeah, sure. So it turns out that the beta for UFC 3 is now out and some people can play it. and the microtransactions are just the worst. Like, so think the loot box play to win for Battlefront 2 that everyone's been talking about, and just double down on that. So the microtransactions, at least from one article that I read, were like, oh yeah, so what you do is every like stat roll, upgrade, fight moves, and things like that can be purchased in loot boxes for real currency. It's the only way to get them now, actually, through these loot boxes. It comes down to just simply the square button, just punching, throwing a punch actually does more damage if you've paid for it, basically.
Oh, geez.
Then I read an article last night on IGN where EA actually reached out to IGN to like clarify, like, hey, this is only for the like my professional league or whatever. It shouldn't affect the multiplayer. I forget exactly the wording they used, but they were like, it shouldn't affect.
I would just note.
I'm gonna see if I can find the article on IGN real fast. But yeah, it's I was like, oh, okay. EA clarifies the use of microtransaction in UFC 3. Da, 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 da. Give me 1 second. EA has informed IGN the purchasable item packs are only available in game's Ultimate Team mode. There are no purchasable fighter upgrades that affect any other mode, a representative EA told IGN, noting there are no options whatsoever to actually make purchases during the beta. I don't know why they had to clarify that there's no way to purchase anything during the beta and not just say, hey, that's not true. As for why these purchasable items are included in the mode, EA explained that the goal of them is to prevent uneven matchups as much as possible. Our matchmaking logic takes fighter attributes, moves, boosts, and perks into account and prioritizes matching players with similarly upgraded fighters in addition to player skill, because EA's finally fixed the problem of no fighting game in the world / any kind of online game has good skill-based matchmaking.
Yeah, and it's interesting to hear that it gets paired up against skill while also including these other metrics. It's like, if you're exceptionally proficient at a game, you're really good at it, they're going to stack you up against fighters that maybe are less skilled, but just paid to punch harder so you guys have a more even match. Like, that's what it sounds like to me.
Is it fair to say that any EA sports game is probably a no-go zone at this point?
It's fair to say that any EA
game
is a no-go.
I don't know. For me, probably. They haven't put out anything that I've found really drawing recently. But of course, I may have to eat my words if they put out something really good.
Or I really wanted their, you know, really their Star Wars games.
Yeah.
You just have to wait for 2019? Or is it...
No, they shut down that studio, remember?
No, 2019 or 2020. And then, I think that's when EA's contract with Disney is up.
And if then, not sooner, hopefully.
And then, then Disney renews their contract with EA. Or Activision or some other really big game developer. I don't see Disney investing any of their IPs into a smaller development team, no matter how good they are.
I can see them investing into something else, considering how not happy they've been with EA's performance with Star Wars. Because even I mentioned it last week, I believe, that EA's stock was taking a hit. Took a hit when Disney stepped in and said, hey, stop that.
Yeah.
Disney stock also took a slight hit as well.
Yeah, and that's probably also part of the reason that they had to call for EA to back off on the microtransactions. And
what does EA do? They just say, okay, we're taking these out
for a bit.
For now. Because I forgot there was an official word from EA basically saying, we're here listening to you guys. And they basically said they're planning on re-putting them back in.
Yeah, they'll bring them back in once they tweak the numbers to be less offensive to their like target consumer base.
i.e. they're waiting for everyone to say, oh, yay, that means they're going to fix the game. Let's buy it.
And then as soon as they cross their fingers, they're like, oh, man. The dream here is that Disney does pick a studio that's just done like exceptional games sometime. For, I don't know, they could pick studios for different
CD Projekt Red
types of games as well. CD Projekt Red, maybe. I really, really love everything behind The Witcher besides the item system and a Star Wars game. If they do another Star Wars RPG style game, the last thing I want to do is slog through item menus and upgrading my equipment all the time. Like, that stuff is just not exciting for me.
Wait, like, should I say From Software then?
Fight is against Darth Vader. You're a young Padawan against Darth Vader. Oh, man. And then you're a young Padawan with a rock against Darth Vader.
Oh, God. You know, you joke about that, but...
Neil is just beaming. He's going to love that game.
I bet Miyazaki could really do a lot of great things with, like, a combat system if he was given, like, the Jedi IP.
It could be cool. Yeah, I mean, think of the... I could possibly get crucified for not knowing enough about Star Wars here, but the big thing that Luke gets dropped into the pit of, is it a Sarlacc? No, it's not a Sarlacc. That's the plant thing.
Excuse me. It's really the Gorgon's pit.
Jabba the Hutt's palace, he gets dropped down and that thing tries to attack him and he slices it up. That could be a cool boss fight. I see that working out like the Asylum demon fight in Dark Souls. But no, I'm thinking like if they I'd really love to see a Star Wars first person shooter game. That would be fine with me, but my real interest lie in reviving the awesome narratives of games like Coder and Coder 2. And so give it to somebody like Obsidian. I mean, we saw what they did with Fallout New Vegas.
But there's no
really
way
great.
They're going to do that. And that actually brings up an interesting point.
I'm talking like a disappointing hypothetical that will never exist, but I still wanted like put some hope into believing.
So there's got to be something in their contract with EA at this point that if they were to dissolve ties, that Knights of the Old Republic would still exist.
What do you mean? Like Knights of the Old Republic was done by BioWare, correct?
Which is EA.
Which is now absorbed into the giant EA blob.
Knights of the Old Republic is an MMO that has, you know, continued to do something.
No,
I understand KOTOR as well, but the Old Republic... Oh, no, that's right. The Old Republic.
I was like, I'm getting confused. Knights of the Old Republic was not an MMO.
But the Old Republic being an MMO, there's got to be something in their agreement that if they were to dissolve ties, that they could continue to run that.
Oh, yeah, I believe that.
Maybe.
I assume so. Are people still playing that? Because the alternative is just taking it all down, like stop supporting servers.
I think people are still playing
I don't
it.
See that happening unless it's not making money.
I heard that had a really good
story mode. Yes,
story. But everything else about it was just awful. And then when they made it free to play, it became even worse, because then they were like, okay, and you got this backpack, you can fit 20 things in it, go.
Oh, they limited your abilities because it went free to play.
Yeah, so basically you could only be like neutral, I think, and you only had 20 item slot, basically.
But you can buy this premium backpack that carries 40 items.
And all it costs is $19.99 a month.
All right, that's what gets me, is if you implement a system where you're renting items in a fucking video game like that.
It's just their subscription model, man. If you subscribe, you get everything you want.
Scott, have you been playing any games?
Metal Gear Solid 5.
How's that
Phantom
going?
Phantom Pain in my ass in the last chapter that I played. But otherwise, really enjoying it. I really cannot stop myself from complaining over and over that either I just, you know, had a kind of glitchy experience in the first encounter with a Metal Gear that I'm trying to hide from, or...
Not
a Metal Gear.
It's not a Metal Gear though.
But it's called Metal Gear.
It's called Sahelanthropist.
Yeah, also known as Oh God, it's also known as ST-84 Metal Gear.
When Death's Head Skull Face takes it, it becomes Sawhillanthropist.
So I didn't realize there were actually Metal Gears in that game.
There's at least one.
There's a mecha. It's not even a Metal Gear. It's a fucking humanoid robot.
Yeah, it really is.
I'm not saying anything bad about it. It's cool, but it's just...
I just haven't heard of Metal Gears being in that game.
Metal Gear.
Metal Gear? Because what actually makes... What's the difference between a Metal Gear and just the mecha?
Solid Snake saying, Metal Gear.
Yeah, I mean, that's mostly it. But yeah, I just wanted to complain that the first time you encounter Sahelanthropus, obviously you can't fight it because you've got like a .45 caliber pistol and rubber bullets in your assault rifle, non-lethal. And so this thing's stomping around and I just had no opportunity to effectively hide from it. Like no matter what I did, as soon as I would like be able to avoid it, it seemed as though it was it was like the wolves in
I was about to say, I wonder if this is the Long Dark Wolves,
you mean?
Not
The Last of Us, I'm sorry, The Long Dark Wolves.
I was about to say, I was going to say Long Dark Wolves at this point, rubber banding.
Yeah, it rubber banded me all the time. No matter what I did, it just like detected me almost instantaneously as soon as I was done hiding. And we're talking like I was wearing the best possible camo for the environment that I was in. Like I was blending into the things that the camo is described to be blending into as giving you the best stealth. And I would be in the lay down stationary phase. So it's the actively camouflaging yourself where you're pressing against the ground. And Sahelanthropus would just like walk right by me and then immediately turn around and look right at me. And I had to play that particular part of the game for like an hour and 30 minutes. It was late at night. The saving system in the game doesn't work where I think you can quit in the middle of a mission. So I stayed up way later than I wanted to doing a part of a game that I really didn't want to. And I'm going to be salty about it for a little while. Otherwise, the game's great, but that's just one of the most awful experiences I've had in a game in a really long time.
Scott, maybe you just stink.
I know. And
have
see,
you,
that's
have
the
you
thing
taken
too,
a shower?
I'm wondering, oh, hey, that's a little rude, but I'm wondering when I'm doing it too, like, am I bad at stealth in this game? And I'm like, wait, I just snuck into an entire facility without getting caught once. I have gotten like the higher letter rankings for almost every mission. Like, I'm not bad at sneaking. This thing is bullshit.
Have you taken a shower at the base yet? Have you taken a shower at the base yet?
Oh, yeah. I take showers all the time. Anytime I get a little blood on me, go to the shower, brush it off. Don't even remember the soldiers that I killed. They don't haunt me.
So you don't stink.
They go down the drain.
Okay, so serious question here. This is the instance where you have
I gotta put
Emmerich
on a copter too.
Okay.
And
so
I can't just balloon him out.
Here's the deal. I remember exactly how I got through this. And because my issue was that you can avoid Sahelanthropus pretty easily, but it's an issue when it's like pods or whatever you call them.
Didn't have an issue with the pods either. It was post pods. Like, dodge Sahelanthropus, he tosses out the pods, avoid getting detected by the pods, crawl 40, not even 40, like sometimes crawl 15 feet to Hal Emmerich and another 15 feet to the copter, and he'd turn around from being half a mile down the road and walk back up and look right at me, and I'd have to reset that over and over
so,
and over again.
Did you ever try using the copter to lure him to a different point on the map?
Like call in a different helicopter?
No, it's the same copter. You call for a pickup as far as you can away from you. And then as like...
I didn't know that you could move it.
Like it just boils down to like you call it to one location and then wait for Sahelanthropus to go and investigate that location and then just pull the helicopter, pull it. It's not like you're doing any manual controls. Then have it pick up at the spot you're at or the spot closest to you.
Oh, well then.
You beat that part though, right?
I'm done with it. Yeah.
See, I thought you were talking about the first fight. And I was thinking to myself, like, I think I just used the mecha robot buddy and just fucked him up that way.
No, I'm not even at that point yet. It felt so satisfying to shoot it with the Gatling gun when it goes to jump at the helicopter. I was like, oh, yeah. I'm shooting you right in the face. Oh man. And then you get the cut, you get like the explosion, like, oh, it's been defeated. And I'm like, I'm going to fire for good measure because this is going to be some stress relief at this point. And then after that, I was just like, I don't think I can go to bed right now. Like, I'm upset and it's already way later than I want it to be. I'm like, but I should probably do just a side mission just to like cleanse my palate from this horrible experience. So when the first fight finally does come around with Sahelanthropus, you know, I'm going to be equipping myself with like the most destructive armament I possibly can, because I'm not wasting my time with this stupid bipedal mech ever again.
It feels so good because I was not using lethal force on humans. And once you get to like the, oh, I'm fighting a robot thing, it's like I finally get to use all of these items I have never touched in the middle of the game.
Did you like? I do like that the main missions kind of mix that up. I try and do non-lethal best as I can, but every once in a while, I decide to go on a rampage because I'm trying to play the game pretty unpredictably. But I really enjoyed the mission where you're trying to stop a bunch of transports. And so...
Oh, yeah, you have to. Yeah, I remember.
Did you complete that perfectly? Did you get every single vehicle?
I don't know if I let some go, but you just have to rocket launcher that thing. If I'm not mistaken, well, I'm pretty sure that's the...
Yeah, but the catch is, like, at that stage in the game, I didn't have enough ammunition with C4 and grenades and rocket launcher be able to defeat all of them. So I did all of the like side objectives as well. Save the prisoner, stop the transport with another rocket launcher, and then like foraged at another base for the rocket launcher ammo to take down the additional enemies that show up at the end of it. Like, I planned it out perfectly to the point where I was retrying it so I could just get a grenade throw perfectly while I'm riding my horse by a like power I don't know what to call it. I guess like a fuse box for one of the bases that you pass, so I can ride by without activating their or without being detected.
Don't you ever call in ammo drops?
No. I don't have that kind of money. I'm like flat broke every time I play the game. I'm just barely staying above the red.
I mean, I just spent $100 in real money, and that's I never have to worry about it.
No, did you buy some land in Star Citizen or something?
Man, I kind of want to, but not really.
Do you own like any form of Star Citizen?
Yes,
I don't, but I feel like it's almost an investment that I'd be willing to make.
It's like there's something of Star Citizen on my computer somewhere. I've done some walking around. I've done some dogfighting, and that's about it.
But not at the same time.
No.
That's not enabled yet. All right, the issue... Okay, so for those of you out there that don't know, you can now get your Star Citizen real estate license and buy land in Star Citizen.
Is that out?
What do you mean?
Is that out in some sort of beta version now, or is it still in alpha?
It's still in alpha. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it will never come out of alpha is part of the worry.
Well, that's part of the issue. But the other thing here is that you're like real estate in the real world is
finite resource.
Exactly. But there's no guarantee that like land is going to be confined or limited in Star Citizen.
Or valuable necessarily. Just because you buy plot of land on a planet with grass and a waterfall and someone's like, ooh, I could see this selling for better to some user later, it doesn't mean that there aren't going to be enough complaints like, this guy's got the only property with grass and a waterfall. Make a new grass waterfall planet. I don't want to pay him for it.
Right. There's just too many like conflicts of interest. And this is all assuming that this game actually becomes a feasible purchase at some point in time. And by feasible, I mean like there is a release schedule in mind, and it's not 60 different game studios that are working in some conjunction with each other in development hell. Like,
I do really love this game's idea, and I want to see it succeed, but it strikes me as something that will be perpetually a work in progress.
You know what game a lot of people really liked in terms of theory, design, and so forth?
Doki Doki Literature Club?
No Man's Sky.
Oh, yeah.
Why would you even bring
actually,
it up?
Actually, that's exactly what made me bring up Star Citizen for the first time to Sierra. I was like, so since No Man's Sky was a flop, you want me to buy you Star Citizen when it releases? Knowing that that may be a promise for 50 years in the future, but I totally see the parallel between the two.
It's not good.
Yeah.
It looks prettier, though.
But you know what looks even prettier than that?
Is it the new Batman Ninja thing?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Have you watched the trailer for it?
I did. Cookie shared around this video that I'll have to add to the show notes later.
It's got one hell of a cast of people involved. I saw two different shout-outs to people who worked on JoJo's.
Yes.
JoJo, Samurai Afro, and...
Afro Samurai.
And I don't remember the third.
It's Kill la Kill and...
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Gurren Lagann, which is Studio Trigger, so it's someone from Trigger, probably.
I was sad to see it, like...
That it's cel-shaded?
Well, that it's 3D. I mean, like, I don't necessarily think there's something inherently Batman. Wrong with cel-shading.
Oh, not cel-shaded, CG.
Yeah, 3D CG like that. Yeah,
I was sad to see that it was CG as well.
But it still looked really good. I mean,
I don't. Yeah. I'm confused by the title Batman Ninja, though, considering they're all samurai.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, because
like even Batman's a samurai.
You would think that maybe he does more ninja stuff in the actual show itself or OVA or whatever. Is it a movie?
We're not sure. 2019? Okay. Was that the date that was on? I don't remember. Either way.
When did he grow a white beard? Or is that just
I think that's just decoration. His face armor. Because we don't ever see Batman's face. Even Robin. His
has like a crazy top-notch shaved head thing going on.
Yeah.
In like the weird spot.
Yeah, like the front of the head. The rest of his head shaved. It's like, I'm still growing hair there. I'm just doing it by choice, guys.
So, but that hairstyle is a samurai hairstyle still. So even he's still a samurai. I think the closest thing to a ninja that we got was Catwoman, and even she was dressed as a samurai. She was fighting Harley Quinn in one scene.
I think it's just that if you're going to hide in the shadows, you're not necessarily samurai.
I didn't see many shadows. They were fighting on a roof.
They were fighting, right.
They were fighting on a roof in the middle of the day.
But when he's talking to Shogunate Gordon, you know, Commissioner Gordon, Shogunate Gordon, he's going to be in a shadow talking to him. It's like, it's not very honorable.
Would Gordon be a Shogunate?
I don't know. Who else would you put there?
I think the Joker is, and the Penguin. Because the Penguin's got a scene with, I think he's fighting Robin. Grodd's in this, or whatever the gorilla is from DC. So yeah, Grodd. And I think they're fighting on top of Joker's palace, which would make sense. So that would put him as a Shogunate. I guess Master Wayne would be a Shogunate because he's supposed to be rich. But he's also not a ninja.
Well, so maybe they're not shoguns, but actually daimyos.
It's daimyo.
Daimyos, yeah. Daimyo. Which are like the warring lords during like the Sengoku period of time.
Also, Ryu's master.
What's that?
Ryu's master. Ryu and Ken's master and Dan's master. Sengoku.
Wasn't it just? Oh, yeah.
Fuck. Shin Megami Tensei.
I was supposed to make a Shin Megami Tensei joke this week.
Okay, so I'm hoping that this is just some non-canon, fucking weird thought experiment show because that would be way more.
It looks like it,
but I would also love to hear what kind of bullshit response they have to explain why they all exist in like some several centuries old Japanese era.
It's just it's Cloud Atlas. It's like recursive history. You just have the same characters like reincarnated throughout the.
I was about to say Batman's going back to prehistoric era a couple of times.
Yeah, it's just Barusu Wayne.
Barusu.
Barusu Wayne.
So
how do you say Wayne? I don't think there's an A sound like that in Japanese.
Yeah, there's
Wayne.
It'd have to be Wayne. Wayne.
Barusu Wayne. So what did he call himself? The Batman. Neil's seriously giving this pronunciation of racist Japanese.
Just thinking about Batman Ninja, and it's just fucking weird.
Like, he's not even a ninja. I'd be like, okay, he's dressed as a ninja. Joker's a samurai. It makes sense. Now it's ninjas versus samurais. But then, like, they're all samurais? You'd think the people who made Afro Samurai would have been like...
It's also samurai for the plural. No need for the extra S.
Exactly. Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. So you'd think the people who did Afro Samurai would have been like, guys, we had more ninjas in Afro Samurai than this Batman ninja. Can we just call it Batman Samurai? Samurai Batman? The Last Samurai?
Well, we're on the topic of Japanese.
Was Ben Affleck the Last Samurai?
No, that was Ken Watanabe. Tom Cruise was in the movie, too.
Oh, man. Too bad it wasn't being that Ben Affleck that was in The Last Samurai, because then...
The connection.
Yeah.
Circle.
Would all have been canon.
Well, while we're making Japanese cultural corrections, we have one email in. This one's from Catherine, and she writes, episodes ago, Neil mistook the term used for Blend S's older woman title, which is One-san. While One-chan does also mean older sister, it is used in situations to indicate closeness or familiarity to the intended subject, whereas One-san delivers an underlying air of familiarity and respect, but not quite to the level of One-sama. More likely to be used between persons who are not as close or as familiar with one another. For the record, Blend S is wonderful and definitely worth a watch. Yeah.
Sounds like a let's watch.
Oh, it's already episode 9 now.
Proud of you anyway.
Mm. It's good. It's a nice feel-good anime that...
That Tiff is enjoying?
Yeah.
Really?
I actually really enjoy it too. It's maybe a little nonsensical at times, but I think that's predominantly a very good trait to have after watching people knife themselves and go into murderous rages and games, you know, fuck themselves up repeatedly. That's what I did to unwind.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, we can make it a let's watch. Apparently it's got Catherine and Neil's thumbs up, so. And it's on my queue.
But there's nothing like, I don't necessarily think, you should watch it. I think you would enjoy it. And I don't think there's much I can complain about aside from the fact that, like, aside from random Japanese cultural issues I have in general, like sexual harassment happens, but no one cares about it. It's lighthearted, but there's nothing intrinsically
worth talking about.
Yeah, like there's no mystery, there's no mystique, there's no hidden agenda. It's just a feel good weird anime about a otaku cafe. Not saying that's bad.
Do they have a coffee of the day? Do they explain the coffee drinks?
No, they don't at all. In fact,
do they have coffee?
They talk more about the desserts, but that's not constant. It's every once in a while they'll talk about the desserts and stuff.
Sad day.
Hmm.
I just want to make food and watch and play video games about food.
Have you watched Sweetness and Lightning yet?
Tried.
That's right. You said it was too dry.
It was very.
The mangas have like the most descriptive recipes of anything I've read or watched. Like where I legitimately learned how to make dishes by reading the reading the recipes. Like okonomiyaki and homemade curry.
Did you actually make homemade curry?
Or home style curry or something. The translation's different. It's not like Japanese curry. It's like a dry curry. But it's not like Indian curry either. The Japanese have like the most fucked up impression of what curry is what I'll say. It's good. It's just not like, it's not actual curry.
I just assumed it's like a sauce that they have curry in.
That's true of any type of curry, right? Like it's a spiced sauce that creates curry, or that indicates what curry is. It's just that, like, when you look at Indian and Thai curry, am I missing anything, Scott?
Indian and Thai are the two that I know the most of, though I think Koreans also make their own curry. Like, it's not nearly as popular. Let's go to good old Wikipedia and make sure we've got all our curries covered.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be a whole plethora, but like those are like the iconic curries that
you can have African style curries. I just thought about that.
There it is. That's the place we're missing.
Like those curries are all like really robust with their spices, and like the spice is the signature taste of that dish.
And gold curry in Japan is like.
But yeah, exactly. When you talk about Japanese curry, it's more like it's less curry. It's like there might still be a teaspoon of curry powder in it or whatever constitutes it.
Yeah.
But it's a gravy more than anything. Meat gravy.
Meat gravy over rice.
It's fucking delicious. Don't get me wrong. It's just I feel bad like my girlfriend's family is super white, and I mean that with all the love in the world, but like I don't think they've ever had Indian food. And so when they talk about like, oh yeah, like there's so many health benefits to curry, blah, 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 yada, yada. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, there might be health benefits to real curry. What I'm making you here is basically gravy with chicken and potatoes.
Right. And maybe you throw in carrots or onions if you want to get real fancy.
That's exactly what I put in. Carrots and onions.
Yeah. When we're like... When I used to visit my sister and her husband, like every once in a while on a weekend, if we wanted to throw something together really quickly, one of the easiest options is to do the Japanese style, like curry, where it is whatever vegetables you can find in your fridge that you can like chop into chunks, tossed in with a little bit of meat and the weird curry gravy that is like gold curry.
Golden curry. And Vermont curry is also really good. It has a little bit of apple and a little bit of syrup.
And you can get like standard or spicy. And even spicy like is not a particularly heavily spiced dish by any sense. It's still incredibly bland compared to Indian or Thai curries.
Like these Indian adolescent children would eat the spicy version of Japanese curry and be like, oh, is this mild? This is so tasty.
It's unseasoned.
I don't know why I don't know how we even got to curry, but...
Because this is Fancy Ramen, a podcast about video games and pretty much everything else.
Yep. Everything else. We need to go get ramen sometime.
Eventually.
Sure.
One of these days.
Yeah, I don't have any ramen options out here, so I'll go out for some pho instead.
Solid.
Pho's probably actually better than ramen.
No.
Yes.
Really? You think ramen is better than pho?
Like when you say better,
like universally better, like so if you took
like objectively better, like you're lying to yourself if it's not better.
Yeah, if you take A+ ramen and A+ pho is always going to win out. If you take D- ramen and pho, the pho will win out.
Sure, I'm gonna go with ramen.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a bigger ramen fan than pho. I've only had pho a couple of times comparatively to ramen.
There are some good places to go out in Omaha, too, to get some really exceptional pho.
What the pho are you talking about?
I only have one place out here that's pretty good. And they like nail their broth, but they're not so hot on having like really fresh items with, say, the bean sprouts or the jalapeno peppers and whatnot.
Wait, there's one thing that tops both of these, though.
Steak? What?
Sukiyaki.
Oh, I haven't had that. Or, I don't even know what that is.
A hot pot, in other words.
Oh, yeah. Duh.
You know, if we hadn't done the hot pot already, this could have been our fucking... All right. I can confidently say now, if you have comments, questions, or corrections, you can write in to podcast@fancyramen.com.
And if you've been enjoying the show, leave a review with us on Apple Podcasts.
But importantly, please tell a friend and help us grow our audience.
Also, we're going to start trying to stream this on Twitch at twitch.tv/cookieskimilk, C-U-K-I-S-K-M-I-L-K, every Sunday around 12-ish Central Standard Time.
And you're going to be in for quite a treat, because that'll be the unadulterated...
Does Neil edit?
No. You know what? I think you would be very curious to look at the running time for the actual live streams, and then like what they become afterwards, because I think... Yeah.
Neil clips out a lot of blank space.
Yeah, the
especially when
stuff.
We're all recording remote.
Yeah,
like that one.
Exactly. The alternative is to just like talk over everybody, and then you have a.
What'd you say, Scott?
So, before we end this episode, I will tell you guys that yes, I apparently got a different ending from you all.
Why didn't you say this during the actual?
Oh my God, Neil! I had to check. I had to check, but there are different endings.
So what was your ending, Neil?
All right, before I say that, have a good day, everybody.
Why does he not want to put this on the thing? Bye.